Hello, Steve. Hello, Jill. It's time to game classy.
Whenever you're late to get onto a podcast like this, I just always want to ask you, Steve, what was it? Why did you miss coming on the podcast? And I want you to say, pornography. I was watching pornography.
Well, you see, Joe, it's a very complicated situation. I was watching pornography.
Ah, knew it. This weekend has been such a fucking blur for me from Adepticon.
Yeah, you ready to deliver your after action report?
I am. We got a couple things to go over. Would you want to go over the big releases? Because I guess that was like the first big thing that was talked about for Adepticon.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the thing that everyone's talking about is 10th edition.
I think you're talking about Shatterpoint, but yeah.
Exo-Xeno? I already forgot the name of it.
Exo-Xeno? What's Exo-Xeno?
That Andy Chambers game.
Oh, actually, I've heard that's pretty good. Just to let you know. It's like a spaceship game, right?
It's sci-fi skirmish looked like.
Oh, maybe I'm thinking something different.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to Game Classy, the best worst gaming podcast on the planet, or the universe for all that we know, because of the ever-expanding nature of the universe.
Why not the multiverse?
No, the multiverse means that probably there's worse podcasts than us. Actually, on this planet, there's worse podcasts than us, but are they the best worst? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying, because we're officially a quantum podcast, because we're the best worst.
Oh, quantum podcast.
Yeah, that's right.
The multiverse of madness here.
Quantum cast.
So anyway, Games Workshop with their big reveal. It wasn't actually that big of a reveal, but I'm going to go over that in just a second. Mm. They announced the edition number 10 of Warhammer 40K.
Yep.
It just keeps coming quicker and quicker every time. I think it was 4 years between 8th and 9th, and now it's 3 years between 9th and 10th.
Well, looking at the changes that I can see anyway, I have a feeling that they're going to, I don't want to say slow down necessarily, but they're going to probably fall more in line with how often Age of Sigmar is getting updates, which is a really consistent pace. Mm. And the reason I think that is because it looks like they're really shredding a lot of the stuff to basically make it more like Age of Sigmar. Like I was looking at like the unit cards or whatever, the date, whatever they call them.
Yeah, the data sheets.
Yeah, the data sheets. I was looking at like how it looks like they're changing the rules, and it really just looks like they're making it more streamlined, like how AOS is.
Yeah.
So if they do that, there's just going to be less need for more frequent updates, like less need for edition changes. Because, and the reason that is because they put more rules just into the data sheet. Less customization, and like, believe it or not, I know it's people are always complaining about it, but like the less customization they have, or the less point based, I shouldn't say that customization, because there's still plenty of choice in Age of Sigmar, because you can, you know, there's a lot of units that have multiple gear options, but the thing that makes that work a lot more in Age of Sigmar, and probably will end up working in 40K as well, is where it's just like, you know, one in every five models can have this special weapon. Your models can be armed with this or this, and there's no points difference, because I think that's one of the ways that editions would break. I mean, and for all I know, they'd already done this in current edition 40K. I haven't been playing it, so I don't really know. But I know that one of the things that would break the editions a lot faster was point-based choices, because there was always like
the best option is basically
right,
what it is.
But the best option is exacerbated by having a points score tied to it, because yes. Like in Age of Sigmar, it's like, okay, if these guys can take swords and shields or spears, if the spears are better, it's not going to be like a double whammy of shittery if you take the swords, because they're not going to cost you extra points, because you just modeled them differently. The unit still costs the same. But in like in fantasy, it'd be like, if spears were worse, you're paying extra points for spears, but they happen like math wise, they end up being worse. It's like, oh, your unit sucks, and it's more expensive. And I think with 40K, because there was always so many, like, this guy can take this gun, this guy can take this gear, you can, you know, give this guy this grenade, blah, blah, blah. And like the points costs just, and I think that's just a quick way to like really unbalance the game rapidly. So then that creates a need for a new edition faster, if that makes any sense.
It does. And I think one of the things that they're trying to get people to do with this 10th edition is actually play 40K as opposed to sitting and talking about playing 40K and then saying, well, there's no point in playing 40K because of X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of word hammer. It was actually, I was reading some of the articles that were just about the new changes to the edition. And one of them was from Polygon, which is kind of a bullshit website anyway. Mm-hmm. But what made me chuckle, and the reason why I'm bringing it up is because a sensible chuckle, yes, is it kept on referring to everything like Magic the Gathering. So they were like, the consolidation of these rules has required a paradigm shift internally at Games Workshop. Brandt says that universal special rules, known as USRs, are making a return to the format, much like Magic the Gathering. And then later on, it's like, these boxes will be akin to pre-constructed Magic the Gathering commander decks.
That's so weird. Why would
you kept on referring to Magic the Gathering?
That's such an odd choice.
I'm like, sensible chuckle.
Mm-hmm. I will say I do like the boarding patrol angle. Like I think that like if boarding patrol ends up being like a pretty fun format to play, I might pick up a boarding patrol force.
Yeah,
that's the size of game that I'm interested in for 40K.
Yeah. It's combat patrol, I think, is what you're thinking, right?
Boarding action? I don't know what the fuck they call it.
Well, boarding action is a type of...
No. It's because they call those boxes boarding patrol boxes.
Okay. Yeah, they're doing a combat patrol, I think, is what you're talking about. It's like a subset of the rules. It's a pre-constructed box.
Yeah, they call the boxes. I don't know what the game format's called, but the boxes are all called boarding patrols.
Okay.
Like here, I'll send you the picture of the one from the Elder.
Oh, I see what you're saying. There is a format called boarding action. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that's the exact size of a 40K game that I'm interested in, and it also contains the stuff that I'd be interested in playing with in 40K, because it's like there's no vehicles. It's bigger than skirmish, which I don't think works really well for 40K. I mean, kill team's a different thing, but like skirmish size, like regular 40K rules, I don't think work well, but like just a bit bigger.
Yeah.
I think like a middle ground that's never really existed in 40K. I think that's exactly where I'd be looking to play.
Yeah. They have the box set for the terrain and like the actual board you'd play on is $200 just about. And it's pretty nice in all honesty.
Yeah, I mean, it looks cool. I really the Tau box is really neat, and I like because it gets you kind of like a full taste of the whole army. Like it's got some crisis suits, it's got some fire warriors, some drones, and you get character. And then all the
Steve's
boxes.
Steve's talking
are
about Tau.
Oh, I'm not gonna.
Everybody, it's happening. Steve's getting into the Tau.
No. If I got anything, it would easily be either Necrons or Death Guard.
Sound the weeb alarm.
Probably the Necrons, actually, because I like the new Wraith models a lot.
Well, I was just watching Pacific Rim, and I was reminded of all of the memes back from like whenever that movie came out, 2014, whatever that was.
Yeah, that movie is like surprisingly old.
It is. Reset the clock.
2013 is when that movie
2013,
came out.
Yeah.
The movie is a decade old. That's insane.
Yeah, and it's... And rewatching it, that movie is pure schlock, but it's done so well. It's very well done schlock.
Oh yeah, it's so. Absolute schlock. Totally, no question. But I mean, I think that's why it works though. I think because Guillermo del Toro is a kaiju fan, and he's a fan. I mean, there's every kaiju movie is garbage. Yeah. Like, do not get it twisted. I love kaiju. I think kaiju are amazing. I love the miniature sets. I love seeing the actors in the rubber suits get thrown into buildings. But those movies are all fucking garbage. Like every kaiju movie ever made is not a good movie. Like yeah, they're all trash.
What would have saved that movie if it was anybody but the white people were in those roles? Like every white person in that movie is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I take that back. Charlie Day and
Charlie Day's pretty funny.
Charlie Day and the guy who played the other doctor, who's from Torchwood, he's really those are both good. They play well off of each other.
Yeah, those two guys would have been excellent. They are excellent, but yeah, I like those two a lot.
Yeah, the white guy lead was so generic. It was like, this is what killed this fucking movie. If they had gotten anybody else,
did it kill? I thought the movie was successful. It was successful.
No, that movie was not successful. Guillermo del Toro really doesn't have successful movies.
Really? I don't know. I guess when people talk about them so much, I just assume that they're successful.
They're very good movies. They make moderate amounts of money, but I don't think he's ever really done a blockbuster.
Oh, it made $411 million.
Yeah, but what was the budget?
I have no idea. I mean, at 2013 money, that's a lot of money.
I mean, it was a lot of money, but it looks
like the estimated budget was $200 million. So yeah. that's definitely mad profit. If the budget was $200 million.
Well, no, you got to remember $200 million. Plus, 50% of that goes towards marketing, which is never put into the actual budget.
I don't know. Well, this is estimated, so I think this is trying to accommodate for budget for marketing.
It could very well, but I mean, still,
because it wouldn't be, if it was just a strict budget, they wouldn't say estimated. So it has to be including something.
No. You estimate the budget so that way you could skim money on the back end.
I see.
So that's because anybody who gets money off the gross. I think it's the gross. You never take the gross. You always take the net. One is based off box office. One is based off of the box office minus, or however much money you take minus how much it costs. So based off profit, and the other one is just based off how much money it makes. Mm-hmm. So if it's profit, you never see any of the money because no movie ever makes any profit.
Yeah, I mean, I know Uprising was a failure.
God,
Uprising was also terrible, so like that that didn't help. that movie being terrible didn't help its case. One of the worst sequels I think I've ever seen, actually.
Okay, so here we go. So the movie itself had a production budget of $150 million.
Okay.
And you say an estimate the film needs to gross $350 million to break even.
Okay. So then if it made $411 million in the box office, we would consider that what, a moderate success?
Yeah, it was a very moderate success, but it's not enough to like get like a true Guillermo del Toro sequel. You get the Asylum sequel.
Yes. Yeah. Which is what it got.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, that checks out.
Yeah. And I think it's because of Sons of Anarchy star Charlie Hunnam. All right, let's get back to Adepticon. As much as we like talking about movies that are 10 years old at this point.
Also, that the fucking theme's still a banger. That was good. I've been watching a lot of kaiju stuff recently, actually. I watched Godzilla's Singular Point.
Speaking of kaiju, we also have the return of the Tyranids. Tyranids are coming back.
That's true. The new Hormagaunts look really nice.
They guess what? They look like Hormagaunts.
Yeah, I mean they look nice. I don't know, like it's like the Korn Berserkers thing. It's just like, it's like, yes, those models look good. If you don't own them already, they're a fine move.
It's a fine move, sir.
it's one of those things where like the model is like quote unquote solved. So like you can make it look better, sure, but it's like it's not going to be an earth shattering difference.
So speaking of. I'm going to send you this so that you could see exactly what I'm looking at. Models that were kind of solved, but they just made look better. They have the new Terminators, right?
Yeah, the new Terminators look nice.
However, I just sent you a picture. I want you to look at the barrels on that chain gun of their model that they're presenting.
It looks like they messed up one of those barrels, huh?
this is their model that they are presenting to the world. It's like brand new Terminators. And guess what? They had to paint the holes on there because they refused to actually mold in drilled out barrels for
that's
the.
So that's so weird. Game. Why wouldn't they?
Why wouldn't they? Right. Because I could do it in 3D. I have had no problem doing it.
I mean, you can clearly see they can because look at the Stormbolter.
Exactly.
The Stormbolter has massive holes in where there should be holes. So
whoever sculpted the assault cannon, they were like, hey, Nigel, could you drill out the barrels for us so when we can in production it could be hauled out barrels? And he's like, no mate, I gotta go to the pub and drink me a pint. And so then they were like, oh no. So they had to have Wesley paint the little holes on the barrel. Yeah, that's how it went. in the UK.
The other new models that look dope were the that Kill Team box set with the dwarves versus, of all things, Beastmen.
Oh yeah, the Beastmen traitors.
Yeah,
the militia, whatever they are.
40K Beastmen. They look awesome.
Yeah, that's a return to an old thing. They haven't had those in years.
Yeah, they look great too.
And Lionel Johnson, of course, was dropped, and he looks like Lionel Johnson. Yep. I mean, nothing fancy. He's very fancy.
Also, shout out to that girl that someone highlighted on Discord being incredibly thirsty for all the new models. That was awesome.
I did not see. I've actually have not been on the Discord for a couple days because I am so physically exhausted from Adepticon.
So Adepticon.
Yeah. There was a couple new things. Like, one of the things, the biggest disappointments was the Cities of Sigmar stuff.
Really? I thought they look awesome.
Well, they look like they got poop buckets on their heads, like piss pots.
Yeah.
I mean
but you got to use what you got, man.
My problem is if you look at the actual Cities of Sigmar in the Warhammer Age of Sigmar books, they have all of these great, fantastic concept pictures of Cities of Sigmar stuff. And I'm like, holy shit, some of this stuff looks so out there and cool. And then you actually see the models and you're like, oh, they have night pots on their heads. So they better do something when they're actually releasing those models to make me interested in it. Because other than that, I'm like, meh.
I mean, if it's just the heads that are a problem, you can always do the heads.
No,
I mean,
it's the whole thing.
I really like the aesthetic. I like the shields. They look really cool.
I think the entire aesthetic looks terrible. I think, well, that most of the helmets look like the fucking Ossiarch Bone Reapers.
Mm. Yeah, to me, they reminded me of the what the hell. They kind of reminded me like of a mix of the actually of Graveguard and the Men-at-Arms from Bretonnia. That's what they reminded me of.
Yeah, I mean, they remind me a lot of Bretonnian stuff, but it's just I think that's if that's their basic troop, I think it's a mistake. You could have done something a lot cooler.
No, I mean, we'll see. I mean, they in theory, this should be the most like diverse
yes.
like set of figures ever. Like they should be, you know, there should be tons of options and all sorts of like very, very weird looks.
Yeah, there should be dwarves and elves and all
yes.
sorts of weird
so we will see.
Yeah, I did like the vampire lady that they released with all the bats.
Oh yes, she's very cool.
So you can put her on the table and then say bats,
bats, baby, bats.
The Seraphon release is very lizardman.
Yeah, they look awesome. I think the Cockscore look really cool. I'm a fan.
Yeah, I mean it's nothing like they look like lizardman resculpted. They look very nice. I've said on the podcast before, I'm not a Lizard Man fan. In talking with some people yesterday, I was talking with a fan of the podcast, Dan. He's a guy I've known for a while. And we were kind of hashing out why I don't like Lizard Men. And I think it's just because they are a very unique painting set, a painting skill to paint Lizard Men to make them look good. And it's a skill that I don't have the intention of ever learning. Because you got to learn very specific types of blending with specific types of colors, and they're very colorful, and it's just not something that's for me. They are very pretty models. They're done very nicely, but I have no desire to paint them, and I have no desire to learn how to paint them.
They are very organic and like somehow simultaneously very textured, but also very flat.
Exactly. It's a very odd painting, but I mean everything looks nice. The new Slan. The new, not Croxagore, well, the new Croxagores, but the new Cold Ones. Those all look fantastic.
Even the basic Saurus Warriors look really good.
Yeah, everything looks great. It's just, it would be very nice if those were in Old World, which they did not announce.
They're not going to announce that while they're announcing the new edition of 40K.
That's kind of what I was coming to the conclusion on is that I think that the reveals were so lackluster because they didn't want anything to take away attention from 40K.
Yeah, they had to be like, because they're announcing a new 40K edition, everything else has to either be for a side game or for 40K, really.
Yeah.
And if you look, that's exactly what they did. Any reveals were all either for specifically 40K or for side games.
Yeah. There was everything else was just very minor updates. So like, Horus Heresy is getting a book. Yay. Kill Team is a new box set, but they release a box set for Kill Team every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the Age of Sigmar stuff is all just like little shit. And then they did something for Underworlds, which I'm still shocked is still going.
Yeah, well, it looks like they're pretty committed to trying to keep the game going in the Nemesis format, which I mean is good. Like if that game has any chance of surviving, it is going to be because of the Nemesis format.
Yeah.
I like the Nemesis format. I think it's a great idea. I kind of wish the game had launched with that format, because and to anyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, the way Nemesis format, so the way Warhammer Underworlds used to work was you could build a custom deck out of all of the available cards. So what that meant is two things. One, there were very busted combinations, so you could build a deck of cards that was nearly unbeatable. That was the first one. The second was you had to buy everything.
You
literally had to buy absolutely everything, no matter what. Like, even if you didn't want the army, you had to buy it because you had to get the cards, period. Because if you didn't, you were instantly not competitive. And like, to the point where, like, it would be like, what I mean is by not competitive, I mean, like, you will lose. Like, 100% of the time you will lose. Like, it was that bad. Like, they were that warping power level. Like, could you imagine going to a game without Earthquake, which was like, you basically move everything on the board a single space. Like, and that's like, that's one of the strongest things you could do in the game, period. And you get to do it to every model, and you're going and you're not bringing it because you didn't buy the box set that came in it. So, you know, that's a problem. And then as the game goes on, it gets worse and worse because, hey, I want to get into this game. Oh, okay. You want to get into the game? Cool. Well, there's 10 war bands that have been released and 2 starters. You need all of it. So you have to, so basically, like, to start playing, you need to buy all 10 war bands and 2 starters. So that's what, you know, that's $600 right there.
Yeah.
Just to start. So the Nemesis format kind of the Nemesis format strictly solves this issue, because the Nemesis format is you get to use a pre-con deck, period. So they have, you can use the deck that came with your figures. Like, you have your faction figures plus generic cards. You can use that deck, or you can use decks they sell separately plus your faction cards. But you just buy the deck separately, and there's no, like, mixing and matching. You don't need to buy everything. It really does solve that issue of both, like, the degenerate decks and the bloat of having to get into the game. Just like it was the same problem with LCGs. It's the exact same problem that LCGs had, where, you know, it's like, okay, I want to get into Netrunner. Okay, well, get ready to open your wallet, bro.
Yeah, it's the very, very similar. But it's still going. I didn't check in on the tournament. I was playing all weekend, so I didn't really get to see too much of, you know, what was going on with the actual Warhammer Underworlds tournament, but it would have been interesting to take a look at. Speaking of, let's talk, that's most of the Warhammer, you know, Aegis and all of the reveals from Games Workshop. There was nothing else outside of that. We're recording on Sunday morning, so they have not yet announced the Golden Demon winners.
They're doing the Golden Demon at their?
Oh yeah, they do. They have done Golden Demon the last 2 years.
Oh, no shit. I didn't know they did Golden Demon.
The Golden Demon
simultaneous? Is that simultaneous with Crystal Brush, or do they not do Crystal Brush anymore?
They don't do Crystal Brush anymore, no.
I see.
Yeah, Cool Mini or Not is very not as involved. However, there was a massive painting competition for all of the Crisis Protocol, all of Marvel games had a massive painting competition. That was interesting, and they didn't get a lot of coverage, but there were some nice painted pieces in there. But it was mostly like a Marvel Crisis Protocol or that chibi game, Marvel United. They were all there.
Yeah. All right.
Oddly enough. So the Golden Demon entry, you know, you got to remember there's thousands of people who are going to Adepticon. But the funny thing is the Golden Demon entry was kind of weak. There was not a lot of entries, and they weren't a lot of good entries either.
Well, I have to imagine if there's obviously I didn't pay attention to anything, but I would imagine if there's other categories that have bigger prizes, that's probably where anyone put their efforts towards.
Not really. There was only 2 painting competitions. One was that weird Marvel one. I don't know who actually sponsored it. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Golden Demon one, mainly because I've only really gotten to be down on the floor for like an hour and a half all weekend. And I'm going today. That's going to so I can browse and do all that sort of stuff.
Sure.
But then I'll probably get a better idea of what was going on there. but the Golden Demons was pretty sparse and not really that great. There were a lot of entries, but you know, as I've said and I've complained about before, there is such a barrier to entry for most people that most people just don't even give a fuck and don't enter. So it's kind of like, what
is it? Is it the sculpting barrier?
It's the sculpting barrier. It's a lot of things. And I think where Games Workshop needs to, if they want to continue do Golden Demons in the US, they, or anywhere really, I think they really need to consider this. This is my solution to the system, is that once you win golden, a first place in a category, you are no longer allowed to enter that category. That's it. So if Javier Bustamante from Spain wins gold in large model fantasy, he is no longer allowed to enter large model fantasy. Make sense?
I can see that. Yeah, no, okay. I can see that.
So he can make a large fantasy model, but he has to put that in open.
Sure.
Okay. And that's just how it goes. So you'll have these guys who, you know, are, it kind of opens it up a little bit. So that way you don't have 6-time Golden Demon winner Jeff Wilson with his Wood Elves, you know, like we used to have back in the day.
You could even throw in another category, and you could have a champions category that'll come later, where it's just like, if you've won, you can enter into this category.
Yes, I like that idea. The only problem with champions category is that's kind of what open should be. Open.
I always thought open was just kind of the catch-all for like, I don't know where this goes. Just throw it in open.
Another thing, Golden Demon needs to be specific in how models are displayed. So if I am entering a unit, right, that unit should be on individual bases. That's the only way that it's a unit, is if it's on individual bases. If you're displaying the unit,
if it's on one scenery, that's a diorama.
That's a diorama. Exactly. So it's not in the spirit of the category, mm-hmm. right? Yes, I understand what you're doing, but a true unit has individualized bases.
That's correct.
I think Golden Demon should just put that out there in the rules, whether or not they want that to happen or they don't want that to happen.
I actually didn't even know that was allowed. I thought if you entered a unit, you had to have them on individual bases.
I thought so too, but there was so many people not doing it that they think they need to be specific in what they're doing. And that also goes for large model. It also goes for individual model. Mm-hmm. If you're putting a guy on a plinth and the plinth is all decorated up and the model's connected to the plinth, that's not a model. That's not an individual model that you could play on the board.
You've made a diorama again.
The diorama. Diorama-rama. The only two categories that should not have individualized bases, or, you know, let's say one is diorama and the second one is dual. But I'm loose on dual. Like you could do individual bases. You could do it as a kind of diorama.
Yeah, I'd say dual would be fine for either.
Yeah. Dual would be fine for either. My only thing is dual is two models.
Yes. Because it's dual. The fucking word is dual. That means
it has to be two models in combat with each other. And because guess what? I've seen a lot of things that were not two models in combat with each other.
Then that doesn't sound like a duel to me.
Exactly. But we'll see who wins. My feeling is that Slayer Sword is going to go to this guy who painted a Jagati Khan. He's from Montreal, so he kind of counts as European. Mm-hmm. So he'll probably win Slayer. Or he will definitely win large 40K, large 40K model. Mm-hmm. But he's or maybe it's individual 40K model, but I think he's going to win the Slayer because that model was gorgeous.
Mm.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, that's good. But it's actually kind of funny because I was sitting there with Dan, who I was talking about earlier. We were going through the Golden Demon stuff last night, just kind of looking around and giving our opinions on it, because it's kind of fun to do. Because mm-hmm. it's like when you're watching the Great British Bake Off at home and you're like, fucking idiot, can't make marzipan, as you're sitting there smoking weed in your underwear, you know, eating a bowl of cereal.
Yeah, so just like shoving Cap'n Crunch in your mouth.
Yeah, fucking idiot. Can't make a marzipan. So we're like wandering around watching, looking at all these models and making comments. And it's like me, I really like muted, undertone, and understated. I like, you know, subtle blending. I like a lot of that stuff. Nice weathering, not too crazy. And he likes a lot of the not flashier, but he likes a little bit more of the brighter mm-hmm. stuff. And it was really interesting to have that conversation, because I could definitely see his side of the perspective, but it's still, I'm just like, I like it nice and muted. Also, Games Workshop's got to ban the European bullshit, as I was calling it, which is where a model is sculpted from scratch in the way that it looks like something from GW. So, like, there was a full-size Sigismund who was hand-sculpted, and I was kind of like, that's just European bullshit. I don't even know if it might be a guy from the U.S., but he's modeling it off of European bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, what you just described, that's exactly what the open category is for.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
It's what you just said, I have no problem with that being entered into the Golden Demon as long as it's only in the open category.
It was in the open category.
That's fine. But if it was in any other category, that's horseshit. Yeah. Like, I don't think any sculpting should be allowed in any category except for open.
No, okay. I like that idea.
Like, if you've sculpted something, that immediately puts it into open.
I saw a lot of people who were kind of aping, like, the new style, I think. I don't know if this is new or I just haven't been paying attention. A lot of people are taking Infinity paint style and taking it into 40K. That's, like, the new thing.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, so a lot of people who are, you know, cutting their teeth off of painting Infinity did a decent job with their 40K models. I don't know if they're necessarily going to win anything, but I think that's like a style a lot of more people are going towards.
I could see that.
So it's a lot more of that hard edged highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Especially not taking away from metallics. So something that would normally be a metal, they're doing in blue.
Right.
They're
just
doing
colors
it with a hard edged highlight.
Okay.
And it looks cool. I don't know if it's going to do anything, but it looked really cool.
That sounds neat.
Yeah. So there was actually some really nice stuff that was in the store floor for Adepticon.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Lunar, which was a game I was talking about before, which is about the US versus Soviets fighting on the moon.
That's very funny.
They also had Final Girl, I think is the name of the game there. I'm not 100% sure, but it's the one that comes, you know, in the VCR box.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. They were there. Blood and Plunder was there, surprisingly. Malifaux. Crocodile Games, your favorite.
Yes, I saw that. They do exist.
They do. They're there every year, and I absolutely adore Chris Fitzpatrick, and I would tell him every time I see him, I absolutely love your 6th edition Dark Elves, and that's, you know.
I do love those 6th edition Dark Elves. They're so nice.
Got a gigantic box of them that I'm going to put into an army someday.
Nice.
And, you know, Flames of War, all that stuff. But what was funny is that all of the historical manufacturers were there. So, you know, Warlord, the guys who do Saga, Pulp Alley, they're all on the floor, right? But all the people playing the historical games are off in another hotel and they have no access to any of it.
That's funny.
Because the organizers were like, you know what? We just don't want these people here anymore. We can't handle it. It's too much. There's too much. No, they need to get a bigger venue. That's what it needs. It needs to move to Rosemont next year or within a few years because it's too big.
All right. Yeah. I could see it.
And plus, I think you'll save on the hotels, too, because when you have the hotels in Rosemont, they're all connected to the convention center. You could just walk right to the convention room. And I think that would be I think that would be the best idea. And, you know, people are sitting there like, well, they should just move it to Kansas City or they should move it to Milwaukee or something like that. And I'm just kind of like, guys, you do realize this is run by a bunch of people from Chicago. We're lazy people. We are not moving it to a place where we have to go to, you know, we're going to run it here and then we're going to go home for the night. Mm-hmm. They're not going to run it, you know, in Milwaukee or Indianapolis. Not going to happen.
Did you see the Star Trek Away missions?
I saw Star Trek Away missions. Yeah.
So at first I was like, cool, a Star Trek skirmish game that's kind of like Underworlds. That sounds neat. Yeah. And then I saw the figures.
Oh, I didn't see the figures. I saw the terrain boards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are the figures bad?
Well, here, let me, I'll let you be the judge. I'll send you the link. We can do this live. We can do it live.
We'll do it live. Yeah, God damn it. We're doing it live.
We're doing it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Yeah,
you can take a look here. I was not thrilled. I'll say that.
I mean, it's if you really want to, what's it called?
Yeah. Why did they do it like that? I don't know.
They're not quite chibi.
That's Yeah, that's the worst part. It's like they're not sculpted badly. Like the sculpts are fine because you can clearly tell what they have done is intentional. But my comment is why would you intentionally do that?
Yeah, that's a choice.
Yeah,
That's
that is a decision that someone made.
yeah. That was yeah, that's a choice. I'm not a fan of it. I'm not a fan of that choice.
So these figures, they kind of look like NBA Jam Big Head mode, where you have
A
like
little bit.
the body is like pretty like somewhat cartoonish looking, but in proportion to itself.
That's got to be called something very specific, like a very specific style.
And then the heads are way too big for the bodies. The heads are like very large.
Ooh, Commander Sela and her Romulan expansion.
That's the thing. It looks like game-wise, like I was like, damn, it looks cool. Like the
You know
spirit
who does
boxes.
actually good Star Trek figures is Titanforge. Titanforge has they have a sci-fi version of their Kickstarter and other Patreon that they do, and they did some fantastic Star Trek like proxies.
Oh, nice.
They only did Federation, but I hope that they do like Klingons or Romulans because they're super cool.
Nice.
Yeah. Let's pause here really quick and then we will come back.
All right.
So, speaking of Star Trek, I wanted to tell you you're an idiot for not watching Picard season three right now.
I want to
You're
watch
an
the whole
idiot.
thing. I want to watch the whole
Idiot.
thing. I don't want to wait.
It's
Want
so
to
good
watch.
for the wait though. The wait is the best part.
No, I want to watch every episode.
Oh, that's the worst because then you dream you marathon it and then you lose the subtleties of the week to week.
I'm only
The thing
watching
that
one.
drags you to the next episode.
I'm only watching one. I watch one per day. That's what I do.
Well,
But I watch it.
that's better than most, but I'll say the week to week is the best part.
Yeah, I don't like the week to week. I like the once per day because that's how I watched each season so far. This is like I watch it on the treadmill in the morning. I watch one episode and then the next day, that's what I do because it gives me enough time. It gives me enough time to absorb the episode, but also not forget anything.
You're an idiot.
No, I love it. It's the
Anyway,
optimal way to watch.
it is the Star Trek The Next Generation movie we deserve. It's
Nice.
so good.
Yeah,
It's so
I've
much
heard
better
nothing.
than every Star Trek The Next Generation movie, including First Contact, which
I've heard
most people
nothing but
say,
positive things.
most people say, I like First Contact, and First Contact's fine, but it's not really that great of a Star Trek movie. It's good, but this movie is like has everything. So I don't know if you don't watch The Mandalorian.
I saw the first season of The Mandalorian.
Yeah. They had Ahmed Best come in. It's like a character, the guy who played Jar Jar Binks. And they're like, Ahmed Best is like finally getting his due and blah blah blah. And I'm like, look, Jar Jar and Ahmed Best, there was nothing wrong with them. It was just that they were shitty characters with shitty dialogue put in a shitty movie by a shitty director.
Yeah,
It's like
exactly.
it's not his fault. It's just
Yeah.
everything that he was associated with was shitty, and people just wanted something to blame for the shittiness of the shit.
Right. It's just like when people say Hayden Christensen's a bad actor, and it's just like, no, he's not. Like Hayden Christensen's a fine actor. I've seen him in
He's
many, many films.
okay.
He's fine. I didn't say he was amazing. Fine. Is he a better actor than is portrayed in those fucking movies? Yes, absolutely he is. But you know what he was doing? Exactly what he was directed to do.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing in those movies.
Yes. And so, but that's the thing is like, a redemption arc for Ahmed Best is like, no, you know who has the redemption arc is fucking the characters in Picard. There are some things that are being done in that show that are amazing.
Oh, fuck. All right. Maybe I'll start watching it.
And even like the thing is the new characters that are introduced this season are awesome. And they're characters that I want more of. The best character in the world is the captain of the Titan, and his name is Captain Shaw. And he is basically the crabbiest captain of all time, and he is awesome. He's not
Wait,
a villain.
even more crabby than Captain Jellico?
He is a better version of Jellico.
Awesome.
Because as I always say, there was nothing wrong with Jellico. Jellico's just command style was completely different than Picard's.
Right.
And we're like, no, we don't like Jellico. It's like, no, Jellico is how you're supposed to act as a captain.
Yeah,
Picard is the exception, not the.
Jellico was an absolute like I am doing this by the book, period, and there's no exceptions.
And that's kind of how Shaw is. Shaw is kind of like that, except he's way more likable because he's just like, whatever. know, and he's not a villain. He's just a captain who does things by the book.
All right.
Yeah. Which is pretty fantastic. And you will watch it and you're like, well, and he describes himself. He's just a grease monkey asshole from Chicago. And I'm like, yes, yes, Shaw.
All right. I'll have to start watching it.
Yeah. And it's one of those things too, where it's the references are very fan servicey, but they're done in such a way that even as a cynical fan, I'm still like, yay.
Yeah, I mean, there's absolutely good and bad fan service. Like, yes. There's like, I mean, we always make fun of the whole "member this."
Yeah,
like, I mean, it's terrible. Like, I don't like that "member this," but there's a difference between like a pointless reference and here we go. There's a difference between a pointless reference and a callback.
Yeah,
I don't mind callbacks, but I hate pointless references.
Yeah. But I think there are some pointless references in this show, but even still, even if it's a pointless reference, it's something that's referenced in such a way that you're just like, yay!
Well, I mean, you can do stuff like that in not a stupid way either. Like, there's a way where you, like, do it in passing, and then there's the way where, like, the person looks at the camera and, like, winks, like,
There's none of that stuff. None of that stuff. But I think, I told you about the last big reveal from last episode.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
Yeah, it was. It's not as like big as you think, but it was still pretty fun. And there's another reference right at the same time that's even better. And it's a reference that they hit you over the head with, but it's important to the plot. So it's just like, but I was still excited. Like it was one of those things where I was like, even though I was gaming all day long on Friday, I still had to run home so I could watch Picard.
All right, I'll have to start watching it. I'll start tomorrow.
Yeah, you need to. It's almost over. I think there's only two more episodes. Maybe.
Oh, good. Yeah, then I won't wait long.
Yeah, I think, but it's like it's so good that it's like why wasn't the last two seasons anywhere near this good? And I think it's because what's his face is not really involved with it.
Yeah, that guy, the showrunner's kind of been like he's been taking hands off.
Yeah, and it's better, and I hope that if they do, because I know Paramount, I know like streaming services right now are cutting back on a lot of things because they realize that they're spending all this money and not getting as much returns as they hoped for.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that they continue with Star Trek as good as Picard and Discovery.
And I mean, they're not Picard getting returns
and Strange New Worlds.
They're not getting fucking return because the goddamn streaming services are, there's so fucking many of them. People are actually picking and choosing.
Yeah, and also the Paramount is a terrible, terrible interface.
Oh, their app is garbage too. I will be in situations where I can stream Netflix perfectly fine, like no problem. Like Netflix, I specifically on the phone. I said app, but just to be clear, specifically on my phone, I'm like, I'm watching Netflix. Like I'll watch a thing on Netflix. I'm like, okay, this is, you know, plays fine, uploads fine. There's no issues with it. I go on Paramount and it's a fucking stuttering mess.
Yeah, Paramount's the worst.
Their app is garbage.
So there are four more episodes. I'm wrong. I was only episode six, but it feels so good that you're just like, I can't believe this has only been on for six episodes.
All right. I'll have to peep it.
The first four episodes are literally a mini movie.
Okay.
It's like if you edited them together, it would make a fantastic next gen movie. That's about, you know, 2 hours long.
All right. Yeah. I'll have to give it a shot.
It's also one of those things that it's like, I like it so much. I can't even articulate why I like it so much.
I'm down.
The last episode though, Steve, was called, and you could take from it what you will, but it's called The Bounty.
The Bounty? The ship? Is it the ship?
I'm not going to say. But exactly. It's like you read it, you're like, The Bounty? See how excited you are? And I just said the name of the title of the episode. And you're like, you're automatically like, I'm sold. Whatever it is, I'm sold.
Is Anthony Hopkins in the episode?
Anthony Hopkins?
Yeah, he's in the movie.
No, Anthony Hopkins isn't in the movie.
Anthony Hopkins is in the movie The Bounty.
Yes, he was in The Bounty with Mel Gibson. I thought you were talking about Star Trek 3.
Oh, no.
Like, no, that was it was Star Trek 4 technically. It was when it was named The Bounty. But Star Trek 3 was with Christopher Lloyd.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But he dies, right?
Yeah, Kurg dies.
Kurg, that's his name.
Or I think it's Kurg.
Krug.
Something like that. It's been a while.
I gotta watch those movies again.
And by a while, I mean like a month ago.
Yeah, for me, it's been like a decade or longer.
Oh my god, you gotta watch the originals. The originals.
It's been a very long time since I've seen the Star Trek movies.
I suggest that any man over the age of, let's say, 35, sits down on a couch with a big screen TV, as big as you can get, right? No family. Nothing. Just sit there by yourself with a glass of whiskey and maybe a snack of your choice. And, well, you know, I say whiskey, but any alcohol of your choice. And you in a big joint, and you watch Star Trek 2 through 6. And you could watch one as well. It's just that one feels so differently than the rest of them. 2 through 6 kind of feel like a continuation of each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But yeah, definitely at least 2 through 6, and you will it's every man should do that at least once, like once every like 5 years.
Humorous. The Star Trek viewing ceremony.
A Star Trek viewing ceremony, yeah. Where it's just like you yell at your kids, you're like, "Leave me alone. I'm watching Star Trek 4." and you can watch it with your wife, but you just, you know, stop making the references, you know. Well, this is a callback to this, you know, sort of thing. But I've Picard has been so wonderful. It's like I thought Star Trek had peaked with new Trek had peaked with Strange New Worlds, but Picard season 3 is so much better.
Fuck, man, I have to watch it now. If you're saying it's better than Strange New Worlds,
it's I don't know if it's necessarily better. I think it's on equal footing, but it's like Strange
Even
New
equal
Worlds,
footing is still insane.
So Strange New Worlds, it's okay. So Picard does to Next Generation what Strange New Worlds did to the original series.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that's sick.
So you know how in Strange New Worlds, you'd be like, ooh, like that was a reference to, you know, Amok Time, or this is a reference to not Enemy Below, but, you know, whatever that one is called with the Romulans.
It's yes, like, yes, yes.
You know, the Next Generation, you're like, this is an episode to, you know, this is a reference to this, or this is a reference to that.
Nice.
So that's pretty cool. There's a pretty good reference to the Tapestry in the last episode.
Oh man, I gotta watch the fuck out of this.
So that'll be interesting. And there's a moment where I'm realizing at the end of the episode, I'm like, oh my god, they're doing this. And then I was like, all they're missing is this. And then at the end of the episode, that shows up, and I'm like, yeah.
All right, I will have to watch this. You've sold me.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that tangent, guys. But you know how Steve and I love our treks.
Yeah, I mean, we go on. This is like a quasi Star Trek podcast at this point, anyway. So
it really is a quasi Star Trek podcast. I mean, if we had to say like if we had any other podcast aside from a gaming podcast, it would probably be a Trek podcast.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. And it would be me standing Neelix and Joe just shitting on Voyager every episode.
Pretty much. You know what I was thinking would be I was watching I watch Red Letter Media, and it's they're the only YouTube show I watch. Mm-hmm. And they've been reviewing Picard, and they were talking, I don't remember if it was during Picard or they were talking about something, it was a different thing that they were talking about, but they were talking about Voyager. Mm-hmm. And how in Voyager, you know, they weren't allowed to keep, you know, like there was no progression of the story, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So like if Voyager, like let's say, got really damaged one week, that damage wouldn't show up the next week.
Yeah. The fucking that show is that almost every single issue with the show Voyager is due to executive fucking meddling.
Yeah. Well, they said like they were talking about like things like, wouldn't it be fucking cool if Voyager would like one week, like let's say a nacelle exploded and they, you know, had to build a replacement, or they found a replacement for it, and that was showed up from week to week until the end of the series. And I'm like, yeah, that would be pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
like,
it'd be great.
I think that would be a better a better example of like what you could do on that show.
Oh, for sure. And they could have done it. They could have easily done it. And you don't even need to like have like you can have a tight continuity, but not require people to, because I mean, obviously all of the choices they made because they were launching on the new network, because it was UPN, they're like, it has to be this. It has to be done in a way where anyone can pick up at any time, but you don't, you can still have a continuity and still be pick upable. Because if the perfect example, if the nacelle is destroyed in this episode, when the next episode starts, you just open on Voyager with the fucking destroyed nacelle. As a viewer, even if you don't know what's going on, if you don't know why that nacelle got destroyed, you don't actually have to know why the nacelle is destroyed, because you immediately see the ship, you see there's a destroyed nacelle. You now know what you need to know, that yes, the nacelle is destroyed.
I mean, it would be really cool, like that episode where they find out about Seven of Nine's, the ship that she got assimilated on, the Raven, right? Was it called the Raven or something like that?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, they found that ship, and in the midst of exploring that ship, the Borg or someone attacked and destroyed the nacelle, so they cannibalized the nacelle from the Raven. Mm-hmm. So it's different looking, but it's still a nacelle.
Right.
You know, and so that way, by the time the Voyager gets back at the end of the series, it's all like cobbled together and it's
Ship of Theseus style.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a Frankenstein monster, but that would make it look so much cooler instead of just like a standard Intrepid class.
Yeah, no, that would have been fucking incredible.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Steve still believes in Tuvix. He believes in Neelix.
I like Tuvix. And that's another thing too. Tuvix could have been like a season long arc. It would have been great, because like
I don't think it would have worked as a season arc.
Maybe
I think
not
it would have worked
arc
as like a three episode.
Yeah, like a several episode thing. Because like the moral quandary should have been a lot more than Janeway just being like, nah, fuck you, I'm killing you.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, that's exactly it. All right. So gaming wise at Adepticon, I want to go back to the gaming just a little bit.
Yes.
I did three games for Horus Heresy. I did the big game, of course, and lots of Titans on the table, all of them fake. At least mine were all fake. But I have to apologize to some people, because I did snap when like eight people were shouting at me at the same time, and I'm like, guys, my autism, stop, one at a time. Can't do this to me. I have to apologize, because I think in my game two, in my day two, I fucked up so many. They shouldn't let me play these games. Is all the basically what I'm saying. I fucked up so many rules day two, that I was just like, ugh. By day three, I was on top of it and I was doing much better. But day two, I was like, I apologize to literally everyone that I played. I just fucked up so many rules in that game. But that's why I play Horus Heresy, because it's a non-competitive game. There's no like first place in Horus Heresy tournaments.
Right. Everyone's there to have a good time.
Everyone's there to have a good time, except me, who's only there to win Best Painted. And I did.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah. No, it's not really Best Painted, because they don't really do like Best Painted. They do like the Legion Standard or something like that. They come up with some names for stuff.
I see.
Yeah, you get I call them fun awards. But they're really cool medals, so you don't feel as like you're not getting like a shitty printed out certificate.
Mm.
Like the guy who like wins like most cigarettes smoked, you know, like that sort of award. Like this is actually like a medal that you could wear around your neck that says like, you know, the Legion Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. I'll play Horus Heresy for years before anything else. I'm not playing it before Bolt Action, because I'm not going over to that hotel with all the losers over there. But overall, it was a fun weekend. I'm going there today. I'm going there with Mr. Lyson, so we get to see the Golden Demon stuff. I get to tour it with an actual Slayer Sword person and get his opinions on it, which is fun, because he's always just like, bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. Terrible. Ooh, I like this. And I'm like, Tim, that's not even a paint. That's not even a model that's in there. That's an arm that fell off of another model. And he's like, no. Look at the shading on that one. It's perfect. That should
looks
win.
Good. Looks good.
I'm like, okay, good on you. And I'll get to walk the floor finally and look at stuff. So,
nice.
I did want to report on, Arena Rex had a huge tournament this year.
Nice.
A ton of people. and I saw got to see them. And the two other observations. No War Machine Hordes was present.
That's not surprising.
It really isn't, but at the same time, it's kind of shocking. Especially with the new edition, you know, coming out, and it's I guess it's popular. I don't know. I haven't seen it being played, and I haven't really seen people buying stuff for it.
So here's the thing. I don't know what's going on with War Machine Hordes, because the print runs sold out multiple times.
Yeah.
War Machine Hordes, like they literally sold out multiple times. But it appears that no one is playing War Machine Hordes. Like I don't know. I if anyone has any insight into it, please let me know.
And you know, from what I know about gaming in the United States, and just stuff that I've learned over the years from doing this podcast, going to conventions and everything else like that, like the big gaming hubs in the United States are essentially Chicago, Kansas City,
Austin,
Texas.
Yeah,
I don't know which part of Texas, but every time I say like
it's Austin for sure.
Is it Austin? Because every time I hear something about Texas, I go, "Oh, where are you guys from? Texas." Oh, yeah, no, okay.
Austin is the gaming hub for Texas.
Yeah, because if someone said like, "Where are you from?" I'd say Chicago, because I'll be damned if I say Illinois.
Right, exactly.
And and New Jersey. New Jersey's got a lot of gamers out there.
Yes, yeah. Jersey's hilariously enough, that Braum miniatures game, many years ago, the meta was absolute Dark Age. I almost forgot the name. The meta was absolutely broken in half by the Jersey play group. They actually came in and they shit up the entire fucking tournament scene because they broke the game.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, that's the interesting thing is, like, most of the people that I see, like, those are like the four big gaming hubs of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there's people who are like, I play down in Atlanta, Georgia. And yeah, it's like, yeah, that's there are people who play everywhere, but I kind of feel like those are the big gaming hubs.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just like CCGs. Like Wisconsin is like massive for Magic. Like there's more Magic pros per capita out of Wisconsin than any other state.
Well, there's nothing else to do in Wisconsin except play Magic and eat cheese.
That's true.
And drink beer.
That's also true.
And maybe tip a cow. But I think that's kind of universal in all rural areas.
Yes, this is also true.
But in talking about Arena Rex, I did want to talk about Shatterpoint, because it looks like Shatterpoint is actually using a similar system to Arena Rex. I didn't get to look at it that much. I only kind of watched it from the side. Let me put it to you this way. There are things I absolutely think are great about Shatterpoint. I love the army building. I love that the way that system is kind of like designed to build your little force. It looks fun, and it looks like it's very thematic with Star Wars. The dice are atrocious.
Does it use special dice?
It's the same, you know, Ares Fantasy Flight system of using way funky dice.
Ugh.
And they're hard to read. I'm like, I am 42 fucking years old. I cannot differentiate between the circle with the circle around it and the diamond with the square around it. Like, I don't do that to me. Just put numbers or letters or something on there.
I will concede there is one thing that you could put on your dice that is okay, that is not numbers. If you do poker suites.
Oh yeah, that would work too. But it's just like, I just don't do it. If you don't have to do it, don't do it.
Yeah.
Like just put, you know, Games Workshop for years has run on a D6 system for armor penetration. And, you know, 1 through 3 does this, 4 does this, 5 does this, 6 does this. All you have to do on your dice, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But they want to, you know, they got to sell their 8-sided die with their special shit on there. And it's just like, it's hard to read. And it's really a turnoff for me.
Yeah, that sucks.
And they have a ton of tokens. And it looks like a standard, like, it looks a lot like Legion in terms of, you know, special ability does X and you do this. And it's a lot. It's definitely not a game for me. But I do find it interesting that whenever when Ares games, Asmodai, puts out one of these new games, the other games all just fade away into, you know, yep. they just disappear.
Yeah.
They're like, well, what about Legion? And they're like, oh, no, we're still supporting Legion. And then you look at like the room that says Legion support and it's just like tumbleweeds.
there's a tumbleweed that has a piece of paper taped to it that says R2-D2 scrawled on it.
Yeah, exactly. And because like I'll ask you, when was the last time you heard anything about X-Wing?
The last thing I heard about X-Wing was when they changed the edition and everyone was like, fuck this game. That was the last thing I heard about X-Wing.
But there's still a ton of people playing it. But I think a lot of effort is going into Crisis Protocol because it's a super popular game, which is surprising. I'm very surprised at how popular Crisis Protocol has become. But, you know, if they, hey, you know, whatever, I got no problem with that. I just don't like having to paint a miniature in a very specific way. Because that's always my problem with stuff like that is like, if I'm painting Wolverine is going to look like one of the standard Wolverine paint schemes. He's not going to look like, I can't create something unique and different for Wolverine.
You should just paint them in other characters' paint schemes just to get people really on tilt. Like, ooh. Like Wolverine, I'm painting him like Venom. Venom, I'm painting him like Spawn.
I paint, actually, that would look pretty sweet. Yeah. I paint Wolverine like Superman. Just put like literally put a Superman outfit on him and just watch people lose their minds.
Yes, there you go. I like it.
Or just bring all DC figures to the tournament.
Ooh, I like that. Oh, okay. DC figures, but painted in Marvel character colors.
I think either way. The only thing I would do is I would do Superman, a Henry Cavill Superman, but with a mustache, like he was supposed to have at the end of.
Nice. Yes. Yeah.
Remember when he cocked his arms in Mission Impossible?
I do.
I tell you, I think about that at least once a week. Cocked his arms like guns. All right. So that's pretty much it in terms of Adepticon. I think some of the other things, there was some other news, like Battletech actually had a pretty big presence there. I know you like Alpha Strike, but the Catalyst had a pretty big table and with a lot of stuff for Battletech, and a lot of people were playing it there. So I think it's still rolling along, but they did a Kickstarter and or something, and people got all upset because it's woke now. Is that a thing?
If you don't like something, it's woke. That's just the new thing.
Yeah.
So like, it literally doesn't matter. Like there's no, they have no justifications or like sensical reasoning for it. That just, if they don't like it, it's woke. So sure. Why not?
Yeah.
Like, sure. Why not? Like, oh, this is woke. It's like, what? Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, it's weird. I don't quite understand what's going on with it, but it's like, isn't like the thing with Battletech always that you have like there's everyone is trans in Battletech? Isn't that like a thing? I always thought it's just like sex doesn't matter in Battletech. Everyone's having sex with everything and there's no such thing as gender, and it's like everything is robot.
Yeah, I mean, and if you're a right wing fascist, you should love the clans because they're like, because eugenics is the law in for clans. So
yeah, there's something like that. It's like, it's weird. It's like, it's super, I don't want to say liberal, but it's like, it's super progressive, but at the same time hyper regressive.
Yeah, it's a combination of like progressive. It's a combination of progressive hopeful future and ultra capitalist dystopia. Like it's literally everything all at once.
Yeah, I mean, and on top of that, I think that wasn't there some like shithead who was like writing stuff for them who was like,
yeah. There was a guy who was he was one of the fiction writers. He ended up people found out that he's like an ultra nationalist, right winger, Nazi dude who was like his YouTube channel was basically just like nonstop white supremacy, and they fired him. So then all the white supremacists got butthurt that this dude that they had never heard of before got fired because of quote unquote wokeism.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is like, I don't know. Like, I understand you people don't understand nuance or even, you know, basic anything because you're all idiots, but you know, you might want to reconsider firing someone who's a literal self-proclaimed Nazi and declare that wokeism. Just saying, like, it's not like a, oh yeah, this person didn't like my opinions, so they call you Nazi. It's like, no, he runs an ultra-nationalist white supremacy, like pro-genocide YouTube channel. So you might Might want to not, hit your hashtag stand with this guy just yet.
And the other thing I wanted to hit before we leave today was the continued fallout from the new D&D edition. I'm finding this lovely and delicious in many, many ways.
Is there more? What's going on?
Well, it's I th people are finally starting to realize that the new edition of Dungeons and Dragons, or did I say D&D or 4K?
You said D&D.
Okay, good. I had a weird like stroke there for a second. One of the things that people aren't realizing about the new edition of D&D is how much microtransactions are going to take place for this game. And I think people are finally waking up to the fact that everything is going to be microtransactioned if you play online. And that to me is delicious because the people are getting so butthurt and upset about it. And people are like, don't play D&D. And they're like, no, but I want to play D&D. And you're like, you don't have to play D&D.
Well, I have a wonderful online take for you about not about even suggesting not playing D&D. Are you ready? This is a real take someone online typed and put out into the real world.
Is it the one I sent you?
I believe it is.
Okay.
This take isn't it? People have invested blood, sweat, and tears into this system, and asking them to blithely to pack it up and leave is the same kind of callous thinking that, in other situations, got us the Trail of Tears.
Oh.
They'll be fine on this other land, and we want this one. That is the current state of D&D brain rot. Just
That's not the one that I sent you.
please think about that for a second. No, it is not the one you sent me.
No, the one that I sent you was this more than anything exemplifies why D&D is the marvel. No. Is the marvel of tabletop. It seeks to create the same consumer's brand as identity relationships so that people even gently suggesting you try another game is tantamount to genocide. That's in
Yes.
response to this take, isn't
Oh
it?
yeah, that's the response to the that's the response to the tweet
Oh
I just read. Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. It's like, can people get over it just long enough to understand that Dungeons and Dragons 5th edition isn't even the best edition of Dungeons and Dragons?
It's just the most popular edition of Dungeons and Dragons.
But how am I supposed to keep track of my character on paper?
It's I don't know, dude. It's so crazy. There's just a, like I just see I just I it, you know it particularly bugs me in general just because the way I see people playing D&D, it's just like there are systems that are from the ground up made for how you are trying to force D&D to play. Like you are square pegging, round holing D&D so badly when there's like multiple round holes for you to use that you refuse to use.
Say that again.
There's multiple round holes for you to use that you refuse to use.
Nice.
Yeah, it just that's something that particularly bugs me because it's always it's like it's someone who's like it's like man, I really wish I could eat something other than hamburgers. It's like you could.
Lots of different food out there.
Yeah, but these hamburgers, man, it's all I can eat. This is only hamburgers. They're the only food that exists. I really wish I could have, I don't know, a vegetable.
It's like, what do you want? Do you want something degenerate? Do you want something fun? Like, just tell me what you want to play. We'll play it.
I just, all I have is hamburgers.
Oh. No, it's like, man, I wish I had more to eat than hamburgers. Well, there's more to eat than hamburgers, but I want to eat hamburgers.
Yeah, but I only like
I
hamburgers.
only like hamburgers. God, that is a perfect explanation of D&D players right there.
Yeah.
All right. We'll go to the Game Classy Facebook page. It's the best way that you could find the link to our Game Classy Discord, where we have stuff and we talk about stuff and we have a lot of Star Trek stuff because we like Star Trek. It's lots. There's lots of different sub Discords or whatever they're called, channels, where we can we are vastly interacting. I've been off for this week because I've been doing Adepticon stuff, but I will be back on there momentarily. I just kind of always just yell at people when they're telling me to play Immortal Empires or whatever that's called.
Yeah, it's Immortal Empires.
Immortal Empires. Like, no, the hats aren't big enough on the Chaos
They're
Lord.
literally perfect size.
I bigger. They have to be bigger.
then you have to mod.
I refuse to mod. My computer can't handle that game. Are you kidding me?
That's fair.
Why was I programmed to feel pain? So you could also, the best way to help out the podcast is like, comment, and subscribe on iTunes. You could also like, comment, and subscribe on the YouTubes where we put it up. And I don't know why I continue to do that, because YouTube is a cesspool. And then, you know, if, oh, you won't see me. I was going to say, if you see me at Adepticon, say hi, but, I was already at Adepticon and I will not be back before this comes up, because I'm actually going to go back to Adepticon, hang out for a bit, come back and put this up. So it'll be up a little bit later. So if you're complaining that this is up a little bit later in terms of our European listeners, I am sorry. It'll probably be up in the evening it'll be ready for tomorrow for your commute to work.
Yes.
When you take the tube to the office.
Ooh, the tube.
Yes, you could listen to it on the lift up to the floor you work on. Mm-hmm. Yes. While you're eating your biscuits. Your digestives.
A digestive biscuit.
Digestive biscuit.
Delicious.
All right. So, Steve, until next time.
Some people don't think it'd be like it is, but it do.
Game Classy.